Hello, this is Dr. Stephen Nurse, and this is my third and final series on the war in Vietnam, titled A Letter is a Living Voice. We will be reading letters and documented accounts written by Vietnam veterans. These letters show all the emotion of war, from fear to anger to love and fellowship. These are only the opinions of the writers of the documents and not those of the voice of Vashon or the readers. In addition, while some of the language in the documents may appear to be racially insensitive, it is the actual language of war. It is my opinion that to use the exact language to give the listener a true understanding of the veterans' ratings and their associated emotions is extremely important. In war, we demonize our enemy through our language and our pictures. We make them inanimate, therefore easier to kill. Well, this is Steve Nurse, and you heard the intro, and this is not necessarily reading letters, but we've got an interview today. We'd like to talk a little bit with a good friend of mine, two good friends of mine, Chris Gaynor, who is a Vietnam vet and actually kind of got me interested in this whole thing. It's his fault. And also listening to the intro and watching Chris, there's a reason why he's not a professional dancer. Also with us is Mike Dorsey. And Mike has been on. He's a repeating star of the Voice of Vashon and is probably well listened to by the six people that are listening to this, maybe if we're lucky. But we really wanted to talk about the issue of healing. And you've heard Sue Bean Warner, or Warner Bean, or I keep getting that wrong. But anyhow, Chris, let's talk to you first. You were back in Vietnam and revisited. You served in which years? Which years did you serve?
1967 and 1968.
1967 to 68. And where were you stationed?
Well, I went, first of all, with the 9th Division on a ship. We left Oakland on January 12th, 1967. And we landed in Vang Tau, which is west of Saigon, southwest, in January, the end of January 1967.
Okay.
And we convoyed to Camp Bearcat, which was a major base.
Kind of where people go, and then they decide at that point where you're going to go from here.
They dumped us there it was dusty, hot, filthy. It was covered, it was sprayed with Agent Orange so much. Nothing grew. It just grew in our bodies.
That's not good.
That's why I'm in a wheelchair, because I have Parkinson's from Agent Orange. So, listening to that music intro just put me right back in the jungle like I was a 20-year-old. It's amazing what the music can bring back memories.
Yeah. And you can remember almost remember different... I remember dancing with some girls at the YMCA at the 9th grade frolic or whatever the heck it was in Ellensburg, Washington, in the gymnasium. Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to the gymnasium and dance at the YMCA, Mike?
I have no memory of that, Steve.
Uh-huh. I'm sure if I saw you dancing, I would have a memory of it.
I went to Catholic school.
Or if I had danced with you.
We just studied and worked. You public
That's
school
right.
people.
Yeah.
That
That's
were
right.
Probably cavorting.
We went to the public library. Where are you going tonight, Steve? I'm going to the public library. To do what? You're really would you like the truth or a good convincing lie? But
we did sock hops in the gym.
Sock hops, yes. And
this is what you don't have your shoes on, you have your socks on, because you don't want to ruin the
that's right.
Floor.
The one that always makes me think of Vietnam is Abraham, Martin, and John.
Yeah.
That's the one that always puts me right back there.
What is it?
Abraham, Martin, and John.
Yeah. Where are they going? Yeah, that's right.
Anybody here seen my old friend? You know, don't ask
that's right.
me
yeah,
to do that.
Yeah. And that was one. The one that I remember was Sky Pilot by...
Oh, yeah.
Eric Burden. And I didn't realize until I had done this series that the Sky Pilots were the ministers and the priests that blessed everybody before they...
killed the enemy.
Before they killed the enemy, before they went out on a bombing run, the Sky Pilots. You'll never reach the sky, I think, is the word about that. And so anyhow, back to the subject. What did you find different? What did you expect, Chris, when you went back to Vietnam? Did you expect to see it something similar or something very different, or what did you expect?
Emotionally, I expected to see what I saw when I was there, which is big base camps with thousands of troops. And I was dead wrong, because between 1975 and 2013, when I went, the Vietnam government scraped any vestige of American involvement and got rid of it. You couldn't find it anywhere. You would never know there was a war, except the unexploded ordnance. But it was so modern. Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City, as they called it, was so modern with high rises and traffic and... You know, just like any other big city, 10 million people in Saigon.
10 million people in Saigon. And my friend Dave Watson, who lives in Ho Chi Minh City, said that, you know, that iconic picture we see of the embassy and the helicopters landing at the embassy and people just literally forming a human chain. And that's exactly what it was, a human chain of people trying to get on that helicopter. He said he had tea in that same building, that now it's kind of like a little mini mall kind of thing with lots of different little businesses in it. And he had tea in that building.
Wow.
And... you know, there are some things in life that, you know, there are pictures we have in life that will never leave our brain, you know. And that's one that I have, which pictures do you see, Chris, that you saw on the news that of Vietnam that you'll never forget? For instance, for me, I also see them pushing helicopters off of aircraft carriers. What sticks in your mind, Chris?
I was in Ho Chi Minh City, and for Tet 1968, not by any choice, but I was supposed to rotate out of the country, and so they put us on trucks and sent us to Benoit. We were there January 30th. January 31st Tet hit, and we were surrounded by enemy, and they were shooting at us. We were unarmed because we had turned in our weapons, and we were get on a commercial airliner and leave. So I was there for 5 days getting shot at, and that's a vision. I have a vision of that. These poor guys who thought they'd never see any fighting, we had their M-14s, and they were dug in around Benoit Air Strip, and we barely got out. They were shelling the runway when our wheels were up on our commercial airline.
And
that's my memory.
Yeah, so you did they eventually get weapons to you, or
no, we didn't have any weapons. We had these guys with M-14s that, you know, in a perimeter trying to protect us. If the Viet Cong had forced the issue and tried to overrun us, we would have all been killed. We thought we were going to die.
So you thought you were leaving the country, and you thought you wound up, it must have felt like a pretty big relief when you at least got on, maybe not even when you got on the plane, but...
No, we waited, so wheels were up, and we were flying, because they were dropping rockets and mortar rounds on the runway. You can see, I have pictures out the window of the jetliner. It was a commercial airliner, it was Continental or something, and as soon as we hit... at our cruising altitude, the stewardess came around and said, okay, we're going to serve you drinks. They asked for ID. They wouldn't serve anyone who was under 21. We had a bunch of guys.
So after you'd been shelled and had all this stuff, and they were going to ask for ID on the...
Yeah, 21.
Uh-huh.
I was 21, wow. Unfortunately, because I shared my drinks.
Were you 21 then?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I shared my drinks with my buddies. We went to the Philippines and I spent the night there. I got the clap. And it was a gift from the Philippines to me.
And usually at those places, they don't ask for ID, so you're okay with that.
Yeah.
How about you, Mike? any iconic pictures that you kind of remember?
The iconic pictures, for me, it's the, obviously the one from the embassy roof is the iconic picture of leaving, but it's the gunships, the helicopters. So if they're, you'll see a picture of a helicopter on a gun run or something firing rockets. Those always stick in my mind.
Did you have rockets on the copters that you were on, or was it just...
Not the ones I was on, usually.
But you were the gunner on that,
Yeah, but not. We didn't have rockets. We weren't. We were delivering infantry, not.
You know,
rocketing.
The picture that I remember, and not being in Vietnam again, was, and I mentioned it before, Walter Cronkite, mm-hmm. with our TVs and even King and Como and everything have these glass desks and laptops and, 8 different cameras and screens. And back then it was one camera on Walter Cronkite. And behind him, he probably had a whiteboard of some kind that... you put up magnetic things on, and it listed the numbers of, people killed.
Mm-hmm.
And he was so stoic. I mean, he didn't get up and walk around. He didn't, anything other than, and today in Vietnam, it's kind of that kind of thing.
In those days, the news is news. It wasn't entertainment. Now it's entertainment.
Yeah, it is. And I think, and the other pictures I remember are the Buddhist guy pouring himself with gasoline and burning himself up to protest. Was he protesting the war? Is that what he was? I don't even know. But
yes, the Saigon government was after the Buddhists because. The Buddhists represented a threat to them. And the Buddhists were protesting the actions of the Saigon government, oppression, and they lit themselves on fire, and it worked. Public opinion here.
The other thing I remember was the picture of the colonel shooting the Viet Cong guy, and having him die.
Well, that was a misleading photograph because, not that he didn't happen like that, and it was awful, but that guy that got shot killed a family of 6, including children, just before then.
The guy that did the shooting.
No, the guy who got shot.
The guy who got shot killed a family of 6.
Murdered them.
Wow.
Yeah, he wasn't a nice, innocent bystander kind of guy. By any means.
I keep doing this. I got stuff done.
Yeah. And again, I guess it shows us that, you know, we can have pictures of everything, and, you know, what we really see or what really happens. You know, we've got cameras on everything. Mm-hmm. Somebody said that if we had pictures, if we everybody had a cell phone in 1963 when Kennedy was killed, we would have, you know, 10,000 views. Now we got the Zapruder pictures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always remember also the Secretary of Defense, McNamara, and he would have his charts on his whiteboard, and he would be explaining what was happening and how the metrics, how they could tell if we were winning or losing, and body counts, and, you know, killed four of us and 19 of them, so, you know, we're winning.
yeah, we're winning, right?
It was absolute BS. And so, McNamara apologized for a lot of that stuff later on. He tried to worm his way out of it, the documentary, where he talks about it. I respect him for many ways, but I think he wasn't telling the president the truth. And the president didn't want to know the truth because he wanted to get reelected and he wanted to win.
Well, isn't that the whole deal with, you know, Chris, do you think that the war in Vietnam was winnable if it had not been fought by politicians? Or would, even if they would, even if we, if the Americans had won, what would we have won?
Well, if we took over and controlled both the North and the South, and we declared victory, we would have been open, and we would have been open to a 20-year, 30-year insurrection, because they weren't going to stop.
Right.
We could take over the government. But the people who were fighting against us from the North and Viet Cong from the South were ready to go to death, go to the very ends of the earth to kick us out.
And it probably would at that point maybe had been a domino theory, because if we had taken over North and South Vietnam, we'd be then fighting China. And like you said, Mike, that... Yeah, you can win a war if you flatten the place, mm-hmm. and there's nothing else left to take.
Like Ukraine.
Like the Ukraine, yeah. What a tragedy. Any iconic pictures for you, Rick? Aha, I caught you off guard there.
Yeah, you did. Actually, you mentioned most of the ones that I think...
I can't hear you.
Oh, here, let me turn the mic up, and then you can hear me.
You sound better now.
Thank you. actually, you've mentioned the ones that I can think of, the pushing the helicopters off the aircraft carrier and the the execution of the Viet Cong guy. Those stick in my mind.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting, and now it's so – those experiences of Vietnam – of Kennedy and those kinds of things are so much in our minds. We'll never forget those things. I mean, I remember, you know, we probably remember where we were when Kennedy got shot. I remember I was in high school and I was in Mr. Olson's class. And now you talk about Vietnam and it's like, you know, people... you know, they don't recall. We need to have history. We need to have history of, you know, people say we shouldn't talk about the Holocaust. We should talk about the Holocaust.
We talk about it all the time. We should talk about the Japanese-American internment camps.
Right.
And the our prison system, which has more inmates than all the other countries in the Western world combined.
That's right.
These are important issues.
They are.
I think that what we learned from, if we learned anything from Vietnam, you can't fight an insurgency with World War II big booms. You know, it makes a big noise, but it doesn't get anywhere.
Yeah.
We were in Cu Chi, and we went all directions across the Cambodian border, and underneath us were the tunnels, and there was a whole government, shadow government, under the tunnels that was ready to jump up and take over Saigon.
And they took, when we left, they took over pretty quickly.
Yeah, they marched up Highway 1 and just walked right in.
Right.
There was no, we had already left. We left in 73. We didn't have any troops except Marines who protected the embassy and other government buildings. And one of the pictures that I have in my mind, which is so heartbreaking, is the Marines dead in the courtyard of the embassy. Been shot dead.
Yep. Yep.
And they were cheated.
Yep. Anything else? Do you think we learned any lessons from Vietnam? Or do we act like we learned any lessons from Vietnam?
Well, that question was asked me by Tim Franks, who was lead presenter for the BBC NewsHour. He wanted to interview me. I don't know why, but he interviewed me on April 30th, 2015, which was the 40th anniversary of the fall of Saigon. I said, we didn't learn anything, but we should have learned that you can't fight a war against a dug-in insurgency without using their tactics, and we never learned that. Some tactical officers knew that you had to get them at where they were most vulnerable, but we didn't learn. We've got it now in Afghanistan. We've got an insurgency that's going to last for generations.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Same in Iraq, same thing.
Right.
If you can't speak the language, communicate with anybody, how are you going to work your way through that?
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And now we're in Ukraine. I mean, you just totally destroyed a system.
It's a year. It's 15 months.
And, they've been there 14 months, and you've essentially destroyed a civilization, that really scares me. And now you have countries like North Korea right now talking about a nuclear bomb that's going to cause a tsunami. I don't know if you've heard about that, but... You put the nuclear bomb down and you start the tsunami and then you destroy all the Western states. And that's pretty crazy. If there's a way to kill somebody, we'll figure it out eventually.
We're good at that.
That guy just has one great idea after another, doesn't he?
Yeah. He comes up with good stuff, you know. And, his whole family seems to also come up with good stuff. And here I wasn't going to get political on any of this.
Nope.
And so I am talking about Rick Ames. I am not speaking for anybody, the voice of Ashon or anything else. And we're kind of getting closed down here. We're kind of just about the end of the day. But Chris, thanks so much for coming. And mm-hmm. I just want to thank, I have learned so much from Chris. He's a great advocate, for veterans with all you've done. And, Mike is my, he's like the mild, meek guy that has lots to say and lots of brains and lots of thoughts. I never knew he was this complex when I was in high school. The only thing that was really complex for me in high school was girls, but that's another story. Would you do it all over again if you had to do it over again? Do you think with some of the knowledge you have now, what would you do, Chris?
I'd go back in a minute.
You would?
I would try to save what I could.
Mm-hmm.
Get out of my way. I'm going to clean this mess up, and you'll see.
Yep.
I'll be dead, but it's okay.
Yeah.
I was ready to go to Ukraine, but I'm too I'm too paralyzed. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't. I'd be a liability. But I would do, if I were had my health, I could do that. I could volunteer.
Yeah. And I've heard that, you know, my friend who's a pilot said he would do that too. I've heard that from a number of people. Did you think you were going to come out of Vietnam alive?
No, I thought I was dead right after the last day I was there. I thought I'm going to die right here. They're going to blow me up and they're going to overrun the Binh Dinh airfield and I'm going to be dead. They'll send me home in a pen box.
That's true. They did chase you all the way out of the country.
Yes.
That's for sure. That would make you feel paranoid.
Yeah. And you probably should be looking back halfway across the Pacific Ocean, too. Anyhow, yeah, that's... well, I really appreciate all that. And Chris, tell me one friend that you had in Vietnam that you'll never forget and what they did, why you will never forget them.
Well, my buddy Bob Peterson, who lives in Kirkland, was in that field cot next to me at our base camp. I was in a field cot, and he was right next to me, and he earned a Silver Star for taking over a 105-millimeter howitzer and turning it at ground level with Beehive and stopping the overrunning Viet Cong from killing us all. And he got a Silver Star for that, and he deserved, you know, richly deserved that.
Right. I'll say.
I'll be seeing him shortly, a couple of weeks.
Will you tell him hello for me?
I sure will.
It would get him on the show.
Yeah, if you want to interview him, he's very interesting, but he won't talk about it.
He doesn't like to talk about it?
No, he doesn't.
Yeah.
I coaxed him into being in my film, my documentary. I talked about him, showed some pictures. He was okay with it. He came over and watched it.
We still need to talk to Peter Ray and get together with him.
Yeah, Pete has re-edited the film, and it's ready to go.
Great. I'm sure Mike would like to see that, too.
Soldier Boy Hears the Distant Guns. Whatever that means, I don't know, but I like the sound of it, so that was the name of my book and my movie.
And Mike, just one last thought. What was your last thought as you were leaving Vietnam?
Oh, my God.
That was probably it, right?
Probably something like that, yeah. You know, you get so paranoid at the end because you're short. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can... So you start to have some optimism and hope and start thinking about going home, which you never do.
See the light at the end of the tunnel, kind of, I guess, a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. But yet you're still there, so naturally... If anybody's going to get hurt, it's going to be the short people, you know. So
yeah.
I was just so happy to get on the airplane and get the hell out of there. If they'd have mortared us on the way out, that would have been just perfect, but they did not. So
short timers mean short. You get to the end of your deployment.
Yeah.
I was surprised the statistics. There were, I think there was over 1,500 men and women that were killed on their last day in Vietnam.
No kidding.
Yeah, and I would have bet that about 500 on their first day in Vietnam.
Yeah. Mm.
So most of those things occurred. Well, that's it for this show, and thanks again to my good friend Mike. And also
you,
my good friend Chris.
Thank you, Stephen.
And Chris, you're an inspiration to me. You really are. So well, you take
it. I was so inspired by you. I went and got myself a wheelchair because I wanted to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, you. That's all good, and we will see you Viet. I almost did a Kronauer thing. Goodbye. Goodbye, Vashon. They both start with a V, so. Goodbye, Vashon, and thanks very much for listening.
listening to Is Abled with Dr. Stephen Nurse. This has been part three of his series on the war in Vietnam entitled A Letter is a Living Voice. To hear additional episodes, including his previous series on the Vietnam War, go to voiceofvashon.org and look for Is Abled under the Shows tab.